I would just say there's one misperception of our veterans, and that is they are somehow damaged goods. Although if we tell our veterans enough that this is what's wrong with them, they may actually start believing it.
Welcome to Dead Reckoning Radio. This episode we have our first sponsor, Recon Rings. Simple, effective silicone wedding bands for those that live kinetic lives. They're tested and proven in austere environments. Go to their website, reconrings.com. Use the code DEADREckoning, capital D, lowercase r, no space, for 10% off any purchase. Our guest today is Jordy Laird. He is the architect behind Kinetic Syndicate. He also started a small business in digital media. Before that, he was in the Marine Corps. He talks about the mistakes he made during his transition and how they shaped him to who he is today and what he aspires to accomplish. Enjoy.
Hey, Jordan, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing. We'll start it off. We'll, talk about maybe, where you're from and what pushed you to join the military.
Okay, for sure. Well, I'm from Twin Falls, Idaho. And so that's like in the middle of nowhere in Idaho. Most of the time people ask if I'm from Iowa instead of Idaho. Like, yeah. Like Idaho doesn't exist. But I grew up in a one stoplight town, place called like Kimberly, Idaho. And I graduated with like 12 people in my class. So pretty much.
Did you start with 12 people or you
know, just? Yeah, it's actually we got the highest attrition rate in any high school. People just drop. No. Unfortunately, I was like number 12 out of 12. So,
thank God for those ASVAB waivers, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no ASVAB waiver when, I mean, technically out of 12 people, I was number 12, so that's like some percentage, right?
Nice. Did you enlist in the Marine Corps right after high school?
No, so I actually was going to college because I wanted to be a fireman, so I was getting my EMT knocked out. And I was either walking in the hallway or was doing like studies, but anyway, there was a TV in one of the rooms, and I think it was the end of Fallujah, like Phantom Fury 2, and then they were also cutting pictures of like the beginning of Ramadi, which turned out to be ironic, but I was like, you know what? Screw this. There's dudes over there. And my girlfriend just broke up with me. I have nothing to do. Might as well just go freaking get it for my country.
The exact same situation I was in.
So I literally walked in. Luckily, I had some like grunt recruiter who was like all sleeved out. And like, I think one arm said pain. The other said like suffering or something like that. It was like, very well, I'm sold. I was like, dude, just I want to go over there. Put me in infantry and send me as soon as you can. So he gave me a ship date like a month out, and I shipped out in January, like the 6th of January of 2006. Wow. And I was done. That was it. Had sold my soul to the devil.
And what did you enlist at, or when you enlist in the Marine Corps, I can't remember. Do you get a guaranteed MOS, or do you get any say with that?
Yeah, at mine, I got a guaranteed MOS of 0311, okay, which is like your basic infantryman. Yeah. I didn't want to do anything fancy or try. I was like, you just put me. I mean, in my mind, I might as well have been charging beaches with like Tom Hanks and the rest of the boys in Saving Private Ryan. Like that was my envisioning of what a grunt was going to be.
No shit about shit. Like, so you went in at 0311, and then what? Where'd you go to? You went to Paris Island from there?
Nope, dude. I've been a West Coast Marine my whole career, so I was lucky. I got to hide from the flagpole, and I was surrounded by grunts. So where I was in Camp San Mateo.
Okay.
And so the way Pendleton used to work, it's not that way anymore, but everything north of what you would say is Las Pulgas like there's this road where all the mortar, like artillery and all that stuff go, and there's a couple ranges. But everything north of Las Pulgas is where all the grunts were. So it's like you had 2-5, 3-5, 1-5, 2-4, 1-1. Like everybody was either at Camp San Mateo or Camp Horno. And also on the north side is where you have SOY, BRC, MCT, and all like the follow-on schools after boot camp. And so it was really different growing up where I was in San Mateo, because there was literally only infantry battalions or like an engineer infantry company in San Mateo. There was no anybody else. So it was just, it was like Lord of the Flies for grunts, like on the other side of this hill. It was awesome. Yeah, so I went to 2-5 first. Okay. Which was just, I don't know. It's like, you don't have those experiences anymore. You know, we showed up to the deck straight from SOI, wearing our pickle suits, with like our sea bags and stuff. And then we used to have these, back when the war was kicking off, there was like a bunch of dudes getting out, and there's so many people deploying and coming back, either wounded or whatever, that they didn't have enough people. Like, the Marine Corps is already on a low budget, yeah, right? So there weren't enough people for these guys. And so you had this 4th battalion, like this 4th company. I forget what they were called. But they would show up at the end of the platoons, and they'd be like the drunk seniors. They'd be like in flip-flops and like board shorts, or like some would be trying to halfway wear a uniform, and some would like just be wearing silkies. And like the gunny that would show up for like morning formation, he'd just look at him and be like, "All right, you guys good or whatever?" And be like, "I'm ready." And he'd be like, "All right, get the fuck out of here. Like, don't poison the new kids, right?" And they just like hobble off to the fucking, what we called them, the fucking crackhead barracks. And it was like literally all the dilapidated barracks that had been around since like 1940.
Oh my God.
And like there was like rats and stuff, and I'm sure bodies like just throughout the whole thing. But that's where all these people, they were like, "Thank you for your service and going to Fallujah and Ramadi. Like, we're going to put you in this hotel for roaches, and then you're going to get out."
Wow. Like, so that was like their WTU. Like their war.
Oh yeah,
that was like their version of the war transition unit at the beginning.
Yeah, basically. Wow. Only they got to transition by, there's fucking PFC Laird in his pickle suits, and they're like, "Oh good, welcome to 2-5 and they're like, God, all hammered. They're like, we're gonna show you Camp San Mateo, and then they proceed to just run us in our pickle suits and like our sea bags. People are like falling out.
You got there, got haze. How long before you deployed from there?
6 months. So I was there, got to my unit. 2-5 had just got back from Ramadi and then went on a MEW. And then, like, for a decompress, the Marine Corps was trying to figure out how to, like, decompress units. So if they went to a combat zone, they'd try and send them on immune next and then send it back to a combat zone for their rotation.
Right.
So they were on immune. So I got to train for about a month with all these like salty war dogs as they were getting out. Some of them were like, "You know why I'm here? Because I hate boots." And they cried. We're like, "Okay, I'm sorry." You know, or some were just, like, we had a PFC who had, like, a Silver Star or something. Silver Star or Bronze Star. But he remained a PFC because he was just, like, the command hated him. he got a Silver Star for, like, disarming an IED because EOD wasn't going to come and all this other stuff.
Jesus.
But those are the kind of people that I got left with for 2 months. So by the time, like, our seniors got back off the MEW, we were already just prepared. So they'd come in, start yelling and telling us to do stuff. And we were like, "Yeah, I got it, man. Okay." And that was it. So yeah, I went straight to 2-5, got like 6 months with them, and then deployed like late February of 2007. So got there. So SOI boot camp was roughly 6 months total.
Yep.
Then I did 6 months of that, and I was literally back on the train.
Damn.
Like from start to finish in Iraq.
And then, and you did time as a scout sniper too, right?
Yeah, that came later. I did two deployments as a grunt, and then I did two deployments as a sniper.
Cool. And then, so how did you get into scout sniper school? Was that an opportunity that came to you while you're in 2-5, or did you go somewhere else after?
Yeah, no, I was in 2-5. Basically, what had happened is we got back from our second deployment, and there's only so many routes you can do in the infantry. Like, you either stay a grunt, and then you become a team leader, a squad leader, and then you're the platoon sergeant. But after that, you're back to being an admin pretty much, yeah. Right? Or you can go to the drill field or down. Like recruiting, drill field, and all that stuff is by going to the sniper platoon, and gives you basically like a specialty MOS where you can keep operating or like deploying in like a infantry fashion. Paperwork out.
Okay.
So I went, took the indoc, and that was just an experience of awesomeness. And then right after that, see, that was in 2009. I went to school in Hawaii and then graduated, came back to 2-5. And that's when I did my first deployment as a sniper up in Japan. Then when we got back from there, we all heard that 3-5 was going to Afghanistan. And so we all called our monitors, and because we had short time, like instead of finishing that time with 2-5 before our B billets hit, they allowed us to jump to 3-5 because they needed so many billets for like either snipers or staff NCOs or NCOs. And so we filled all their like sniper billets up and were able to jump there and then deployed with 3-5 to Afghanistan.
Cool. Was that the deployment that there's that video we were talking about?
Yeah, for the 25 yeah. video. It was by Logan yeah. Stark.
You helped him make it, right?
Yeah, so I helped him make it in the sense that like I gave him a couple videos and stuff for it, and then he interviewed me, but there was a couple other people he was able to interview from the platoon too. So like I mean it was all him. So in the sense of helping, I guess like I gave him some material, but other people in the platoon also gave him material too. So it was kind of like a joint effort in that yeah. sense, but he ran the whole show and did it all himself because he was going through film school in Michigan. And so that was like part of his, he was able to come visit. And I think that was almost 3 years at that point that we had been back when we did the interview. So it was the first time I got to see anybody from the deployment, really.
Oh, wow.
Or since I was in. And then Logan and I had a special relationship in general because him and I went to sniper school together. When we got back from sniper school, I was his team leader, and he was my radio operator. And so it was just kind of a weird like thing that we kind of got to stay together through the beginning of our careers and on and stuff. And then, yeah, so the video came as an inspiration. It kind of was supposed to give, like the sniper platoon's eyes on the infantry, like how personal it becomes. Yeah. Because a lot of people don't think about us. You know, they think of us as separate entities, but the real deal is because we're organic to the battalion, we actually become close with all these dudes from throughout the battalion because they're like, hey, this team's going to be with Kilo Company, Lima, or India. And then on the next training cycle, this team's going to be with Kilo, Lima, India. Or, and you guys switch up. So you meet all the different commanders. You meet all the different platoons or squad leaders that you might have to work with, whether you're doing an insert or something. And it becomes a lot more personal, especially when you deploy and you start losing dudes at the rapid. It's like, oh, you hear a name over the thing. You're like, dude, I remember I did this mission with him in CAX, or I did this. And so it's not really you just being isolated to working with your one platoon, your one squad, and your one. You
end up interacting
with all these people. Yeah. Right. And so, and it also gives you a more like a deeper sense of like mission purpose, in the sense that like I got to protect all these dudes now. Like, because the one thing I was excited about when I joined the platoon, when we went to CAX, which is our training in 29 Palms, I didn't have to run range 400 anymore, or like any of these stupid long training runs where you're just like running in the heat for like miles and assaulting like bunkers made of rubber and stuff. Like, people are falling out from heat casualties. I got to sit in this hide and just like look down there with my binos and be like, hey man, you guys are doing a good job. And I was like, I'm so glad I don't have to do that anymore.
My favorite part of my job.
Like, oh yes. On the same point, it was like, it gives you a whole new perspective of, you know, when you're a grunt, you're just running around, you're like, you don't really think about all the external facets that are helping, that are helping support you. Because in reality, being a scout sniper made me realize even more that everybody, it doesn't matter who you are, is just support for the infantry.
Yeah.
Because even though I might be cool guy and look all this stuff or whatever that people think snipers are, or recon, or, you know, SEALs, Green Berets, like, that's all cool stuff, man. But the dude that's actually in the fight, who's actually like kicking down doors 24/7, is the grunt. Whether it's Army or friggin' Marine Corps, it's like, those are the dudes that are hooking and jabbing, like, and living in the shittiest conditions and still doing it day in and day out.
I've never heard it put like that. It's an interesting way to look at it. So was that deployment your last one?
Yeah, that was my last deployment in the Marine Corps / like big military and sense then, of things.
So did you already have a family before you got out, or?
Yeah, I got married when I was 19. Boy. So I was the guy when like all the DIs asked, who's getting married after boot camp? And then like, I like raised my little hand and they're like, you're going to be divorced by the end of the month. And I was like, okay.
Thank you. Sweet.
Aye, aye, sir. Yeah, I was that guy. But I made it 12 years, so.
That's pretty good, man. It's a good run.
It's pretty good.
Healthy.
It's a good run.
Was that part of what pushed you to get out of the Marine Corps?
No, what pushed me to get out of the Marine Corps is, if you would have talked to me any other time, even before we went to Sangin, you would have been like, Laird's going to be a lifer. Like, there is no question about it. That dude's going to be sergeant major. Or no, I would have been a master sergeant, because like, I would have put F on my fit reps. Or I wouldn't have put F on my fit reps. Would have put like M, master sergeant, not first sergeant. Mainly because I can't pronounce sergeant. I like say like S-A-R-N-G-N-T. So I would like pronounce it. And so I'm retarded. Yeah, so I would have been in for 20 years. There was no problem. And then what started to happen was, and it's ironic if you pay attention to like Marine Corps Times and all this stuff, like over the past couple of years, they've been coming out with all these articles that are like, where did all the combat veterans go? Where did all the infantry guys go? Where's all, you have like senior dudes that are in force and in MARSOC, in recon communities and sniper communities, senior dudes, right? these guys maybe have 2 years left on their contract at their 18-year mark or at their 16-year mark, right? And they're getting out. Why would you get out? Why would you throw away your 20 years at 2 years or 4 years even? And especially me, when I was getting out, they were like, Laird's getting out? Like, what the fuck? Like, not that I was like some asset to the Marine Corps. I'm saying like my friends in general were just like, wow, you're getting out. Like, never would have thought about that. But the Marine Corps had changed so much that I couldn't respect it anymore. I couldn't be a part of the organization as a whole anymore. Because the Marine Corps does a really weird thing where they do basic cross-pollination, right? So it doesn't matter if you've never been in the infantry your whole career. If you're at your 12-year mark, you need to diversify your leadership. So you get some dude who's been in the air wing for all 12 years of his career, or the motor T side of the house for 12 years of career, or comm, or some non-MOS that has anything to do with actual grunt infantry tactics. And then you put him in charge as the gunny or the first sergeant of a line company.
Yeah.
Right. And so what you get is you get all these, and I'm nothing against Pogues, but you get all these like Pogue style ideas because they're always in the rear and not constantly in the field, right? So they have this mentality where, I mean, you can look in the Marine Corps Museum and look at photos of Marines during Fallujah. Like, these dudes are hooking and jabbing, right? There's like rounds kicking off in the photo, like above their head and stuff. And you think this guy's taking a knee, right? But he's not. If you look closer, you're going to realize that dude's not taking a knee. He's freaking blousing his boots because the company gunny said he swears to God if he sees any more Marines with unbloused boots on CNN, you know, they're going to get NJP'd or something, you know? So here's these dudes in the middle of the shit, and they're like, oh my God, I got to, not only am I taking this house and my buddy just got smoked, but God forbid I have my boots unbloused. So you get ridiculous things like that.
So that, like, it's like a lot of the bureaucracy kind of got to you, and that kind of pushed you to get out. Did you have a plan as to what you were going to do after?
No, I didn't. Because, like I said, I was going to be a lifer.
How much time did you have left at that point? Or were you already supposed to get out as soon as you got back?
Yeah, basically, I was short time, so we got back in May time frame. Then I'm trying to do math. I count on my fingers, so it's in March, April, May, July, August. I had exactly 9 months left, so I went down and spent the 9 months at pre-sniper school as an instructor down there before I got out. And then while I was there, one of my buddies called me and got me in line with the contract. So when I got out, even though I had no plan, I got out on a contract and was able to go contracting right away.
Nice. So what did you do? Did you do the same thing contracting that you did in the Marine Corps?
Yeah. Only they call it like a DM or whatever, because it's more politically correct when you're working for the Department of State. You're a designated marksman, right, and not a sniper.
Cool. And then how long did you do that for?
Did that from 2011 all the way up till 2016.
Wow. And then
no, 2017.
Yeah, so you did that for quite a bit. That built up your resume, I'm sure. And yeah, I got to work
with a lot of good dudes. Honestly, because I just like screwed up, man. I never got help when I was out, and I had a lot of issues I needed to deal with, and I wasn't dealing with them personally. I was blaming. I had the whole victim mentality, like, oh, you know, like I bought into the whole thing, which is why I'm so into companies like you and Kinetic Syndicate and like all these other ones, because I bought into the bro vet mentality. You know, I was the guy that was like, you don't understand what I've been through. Yeah. Like, I thought that was legitimate excuse. And so that narrative just, it put me in a deeper hole, because I got more depressed, more isolated, because I was isolating myself without subconsciously thinking about it, you know? And it got me to the point where I was getting a divorce, to where I was all over the place, man. I just got this amazing job. And like house and everything. And I left my wife. I left my job. I left like everything I had ever known. And then I tried to get back with my wife. And then I didn't know if I wanted to be with my wife or not, or if I wanted to go back or be like you have weird thoughts in your head, you know, like
what, so what do you think? I mean, what do you think got you back on track?
Honestly, it was hitting rock bottom, in the sense of I had no reason at that point to blame anything on anything else. Yep. Right. Cause when I thought about it, it was like, bro, like you haven't deployed like with the Marine Corps in almost 6 years. You haven't been in Afghanistan in about a year. Like you haven't been in any other country for about a year. It's just like, boom. I can't blame this on anything. Can't blame it on my injuries or a TBI or any other physical injuries or PTSD or whatever. And why can't I blame it on that? Because I never sought help for it. So if those were actual issues,
so whether or not,
then I should have sought help for it. Yeah, you're saying
like whether or not the issues were legitimate, like you yourself were responsible because you didn't seek help for them.
Exactly. I was too busy making excuses like, oh, nobody at the VA understands me, or, you know, they're just going to do this and throw me in with all, you know, it was all hearsay. I mean, I had never really went to the VA. And I had never really like with volition on my own, like tried to seek out help. And like, look, I actually have a problem. How do I fix this? What can we do? And I had gone to like a PTSD camp, you know, where you show up and just like do all this fun stuff and you try and talk about your problems. But that was just worse, because after that week I get back home and I was around veterans and we were riding motorcycles and we were doing this and it was fun. And all of a sudden I'm back home and I'm not around anybody. I'm around my wife and she's pregnant and I have no job. And it made me even more depressed, because it was like what I would assume, like, you know, like trying to fiend for some crack or something. Then you get a little hit and then you're like, yes, that's what it is. And then all of a sudden you're going cold turkey again. Like,
yeah,
you're going to like some have a heart attack,
like more sustainable solutions.
Exactly. And so that's when I really got into, all right, is unmanly or uncool or whatever I thought it was. I was like, I'm going to do one-on-one. And they're doing one-on-one. I'm going to get a psych. And we're going to do the whole down the Wizard of Oz route. And it actually helped. It actually, so like hitting rock bottom in that sense, not in like a sob story. Yeah, then I hit rock bottom. Trust me, I could go that route because it was pretty ridiculous being homeless. But like, that's not the point. The point is not that people hit rock bottom. It's how do they use it, you know? And a lot of people try and use that whole narrative of how much they failed to like inspire people. But Jackson Brown has this quote, and he says, "Don't confront me with my failures. I have not forgotten them." And, dude, that's how I am when I started talking to other vets. Like, I could sit there and try and cope with this dude, be like, "Oh, I totally know what you're going through. In fact, I also was doing crack off a stripper in this hotel room while I was also running from the police," or make like some ridiculous story to try and. But what does that help? It's just rehashing on who has the worst story, who has the most powerful, whatever, you know? And that was another thing. And then I met this dude named Corey Duffy. He's actually a part of the Kinetic Syndicate thing. And he helped me turn around through finding alternatives, through like lifting and nutrition and doing all that stuff. So I got into climbing, actually. I really, really got into climbing. And where I'm in Idaho, it's more bouldering. Yeah. And so once I started getting into these other niches and getting myself out there and being healthy and interacting with people, it got to the point where, like, this one time I was at a bar listening to this live band, and these people are like, "So, man, like, what do you do?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, you know, I'm kind of going to school for mobile programming and like web design, all this stuff." And they're like, "Oh, awesome. What'd you do before this?" And I was like, "Oh, I was in the Marine Corps." And they were like dumbfounded, like their jaws, because I had like long hair, my beard, and I wear like hippie clothes and like some slip-on Vans. And I mean, I look good. I don't look like a bum, but I definitely look like I'm some like hippie from the PNW. And they're like, "You, wait a minute, you were a Marine, yeah?" And it actually, that was the first time I actually felt pride in being a Marine and a veteran. And because I was actually a part of society again. And the reason I was part of society is because I dumped the whole mentality that me being a veteran or anything gave me a purpose. I realized that my own purpose comes from inside. It comes from my heart. It comes from doing the things that I love. And I loved being in the Marine Corps. I loved being a scout sniper. I loved doing all these like operations outside of that as a contractor. But that was just a part of my life. And now I'm Jordan Laird. I'm not Staff Sergeant Laird. I'm not this guy. I am who I am. That was a part of my story. And so once I made that delineation from, or that change, I guess, of my mindset, that's what got me back to the real world. Being able to actually make changes is by confronting all the hard isms that like Marine Corps, Army, Navy, Air Force, we all deal with. Because trust me, if you tell some vet right now that's wearing like a dysfunctional veteran's hat and all this stuff, it's like, "You're the whole reason. Like, you're perpetuating your own problem. If you honestly feel you're a dysfunctional veteran and people need to stay 100 meters back, like you're some fucking Iraq sign back in 2006 and like 2004, like, you're the whole reason that you're at where you're at." Dude, that guy will lose his shit. But the truth is, until he drops that mentality and goes back to the mentality like dudes from World War II had, they didn't come back and hold that in people's faces. No, they went back to the factories, you know? Back in the day, it was like, "Hey, Joe, you hear we're going to war with Japan? They're like, do you want to join up? It gets me out of the factory for a couple months, you know? There goes two 16-year-olds going to freaking Normandy or whatever because it got them out of the factory. So then they go through that whole shithole. And then they get back to the factory, and they were probably in the factory like, "Hey, remember that one time we charged that beach? Holy shit."
I think when we were talking about that with Megan Mobbs and Johnny too, but I think what Megan said for sure is that there was definitely cultural differences and like economical differences and stuff like that, that really like it's kind of apples to oranges sometimes when you're talking about, you know, comparisons between like our generation and like greatest generation.
Right.
But,
and that's true because like people like my grandma and grandpa, I mean, they still save plastic bags and stuff, you know, because of the Great Depression. They're like, what are you saving all those Ziplocs for? You never know. Okay, Grandpa.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's funny, though, because I think regardless of you know, it is apples to oranges, right? Totally different generations, different economies, different wars. However, there are many takeaways that we can, you know, we can look at from how that generation handled their shit.
Right.
You know, and how they, but you know, one of the things that Mobs brought up is that a lot of those guys had jobs waiting for them when they came back.
Right.
And as much as we're treated better than Vietnam veterans, we still like, they don't know how to treat us. Right. And that's where that whole domestic or dysfunctional veteran shit that you're talking about, like, really hurts that relationship between military and civilians, where, you know, nobody's going to want to hire guys that wear grunt style and, you know, like bring Jack's Link beef jerky for lunch. Like, it's not,
it's like the most perfect depiction I had seen from it, or just from my side. So if you ever watch the documentary or the series, Pacific, which is like, same. Okay. So that follows Kilo 3-5 through World War II, right? And so I served Kilo. Like, oh yeah. That's my company. That's what I was attached to Kilo 3-5. We were called Sledgehammer, you know, three Sledgehammer, whatever. So that at the end, when Eugene Sledge, he's like going through recruiting or college, whatever. And she's like, naming all these lists, right? And do you have any electrical skills? Do you have any of this skills? Do you have any of this? And he's like, no, no, no. And then she finally goes, didn't the Marine Corps teach you anything? He's like, they taught me how to kill jets. And I got really damn good at it. And you're like, oh, shit. Eugene's dropping the bomb. But it's like, that's how your initial reaction is. Because you feel like your service that you're supposed to be proud of when you get out and you don't have a purpose anymore, in the sense of, I don't have a job. I don't have this. I don't have an education. I need to go back to college. I'm going to go back to college. And all these kids are 18. I'm like 24, 26 in my 30s. You kind of get that idea that I don't have anything except the Marine Corps or the Army or the Air Force. So I could see that plight. But at the same time, that fear, that initial fear, how you deal with it, that initial like realization of what you may not have or do have to plug into society, that's what changes your path. You can go on my path, where I took the path of like, well, then fuck everybody. I'm a broken, disgruntled veteran with like PTSD and TBI. I'm about like trying to figure out what basic math is again and doing all this. Or I could have been, I got all these problems. I just did this. It was basically like doing high school. Now I got to go to college. Okay. Like in the sense of professional like lifestyle, right? I went and got my bachelor's in the Marine Corps, you know, as a grunt, did all that stuff in the professional sector. Now I actually got to go and get my master's or something. But it's just like that next level in life. So I had to go back to school. Okay. So I had to start over in this sector or this. Okay. I chose to do that as a service. That was my service. I can't hold that against people and beat them over the head with it. Like, all right, why are you doing, I'll tell you why I'm starting college at 30. You know, it's like, no, that's not going
to
fly.
That's how you talk to other adults.
Right. You gotta be like, oh, well, you know, I did some time in the Corps and that was it, dude. So now I'm here. They're going to have more respect for you doing that than the dude that's like trying to perpetuate how awesome his career yeah. was and why he is so insecure that he's in class with you that he has to remind you the reason he's insecure is because he was in the Marine Corps. And that's why he's insecure.
I would say like the best thing you can do to assimilate is, you know, go to school, but you have to be ready to make that transition because, you know, you can't, you can't go there with that dysfunctional veteran mentality. Like, you can't go there like wanting attention from people. I think there's some stuff you got to get right with yourself about first. The American University is like the best and worst place for a transitioning veteran, I guess. It just depends on.
Well, yeah, because it's like an indoctrination into what society is. It gives you a pretty good like idea of, hey, this is the American society that you need to get used to. Because you got to deal with these professors or these students, and they all have different views. And you're Debo, you know, what you got on my 40, Craig, to whatever student, because you disagree with their view, isn't going to fly. Am I like your first convicted felon that you're like interviewing live while on house arrest in a hotel?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's definitely a first. So,
like, I would talk about in the where I am currently is that, I mean, I am in a hotel and I am on house arrest and it is a financial burden, but I see this as a blessing and an opportunity to, one, start my business, and two, to change the narrative voices before people, because there's plenty of people that go down the route that I went down and end up in not the same situation I was blessed to end up. I mean, I get to serve house arrest in a hotel room. That's pretty lucky, you know?
And so how are you doing with that, like, because you're not really able to see your family at this point?
Yeah, no. So it's been rough. I mean, you get FaceTime, you know, and at first I thought it was going to be pretty easy for me in the sense of like psychologically, but it's been worse because they're I talk to Johnny, at Mobs every now and then, and they kind of help keep me in line in respect to my mind, because it's hard to not focus on the past and look at where I am and not think of all the positives. So, you know.
You mean like the positives that are already.
Yeah, that I have gone. Made change and all the stuff that is going on. Instead of just look like, oh, you're a piece of crap. You're still on house arrest. You're still dealing with the repercussions of what you did, and I am, but at the same time, I'm choosing not to be a victim of that. And, you know, I started my own creative company, which is like a media hub for all sorts of things, whether, you know, web design or logos and like whatever. And then being able to be involved with Kinetic Syndicate, just gave me that much more to invest into the veteran community to get people out of these poisonous routes they'll go on. And
were you already thinking about doing design and stuff before all that went down and you ended up on house arrest, or did your living situation and like your position with the courts kind of push you to do something where that you could do from a hotel room?
Well, I was actually already going on to school online, and I got like 3/4 of my degree is in biblical and theological studies with a minor in Christian counseling.
Good.
And I only laugh because it's very ironic when people hear that, because they don't think of like, I don't know, but yeah, so I was doing that, and then when all this stuff hit, I had a couple friends that needed websites built and doing all this stuff, and I'd been doing this part-time. They were just getting ripped off by dudes that are, like, charging them ridiculous amounts to get a website built or to get this logo or to do a commercial or whatever. And then the product was just garbage. And so I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I started talking to Johnny about just doing stuff for ourselves and not being afraid and pulling the trigger. And like the very next day, I got my business registered and licensed. I changed everything to officially. So instead of it being like a sub minor in like web design applications, I changed it to a major and just went and dove hard into it.
Nice.
Because a lot of veterans, if you see like, we didn't have a means of staying connected, so now they stay connected through social media, and they do that through memes or like things like Vet TV, or they're using the like digital world to stay connected or to keep people feeling or to close that gap. So you may be in the middle of Antarctica and have no one around, but you can get on Instagram real quick and be like, oh, that's so funny, you know, I remember that, or this reminds me of this, and you're not losing that connection on a like subconscious level. You're receiving it. So that's a huge thing that I wanted to just start helping in, is making that so people can do that without spending 10 grand on a website or whatever, you know.
And it's, you know, it's a way that you can provide right now, like, right? That's the thing. That's what I think is the coolest part about what you're doing with your life right now. I mean, other than, you know, not continuing on the path that you were on,
right,
is that like you have a situation and you're not blaming anyone. Like, you're not blaming the Marine Corps, you're not blaming the Taliban, like, you're not you're not blaming the civilians. Like, you're taking accountability for bad decisions that you made, and not only just saying like, okay, I fucked up, but like, because that's, you know, that, I mean, that's easy,
right,
to just say like, oh, I fucked up,
right?
But like the next part after that is what I think is difficult, and I think you nailed it. Like, you're in a really like a not ideal living situation,
right?
And you're still managing to do something with your time and space to make money, right? Where like, you're not really able to go anywhere, you're not able to do anything. Like, yeah, I don't know, man, that's admirable.
Thanks. I mean, I appreciate it. A lot of it, honestly, is I don't know, it's kind of the fruition. I guess it was the medium that made, like, I told you before, like, I had a point where I was like, okay, I need to change this, or I need to change this. And that being in the situation I am, you're right. Like, I have nothing else to do except work on my laptop. I'm like, and so I could either be really depressive and just sit in my bed and not do anything, or I can actually be productive. And so it was also the medium to like kickstart, because now it's like, okay, you have to get up today, because if you don't, you're not going to get this job done, or you're not going to be able to, you know, get this project done for this guy, and he's really counting on you for his business to start because he needs this done. Or it's giving me a sense of purpose, but it's not just a sense of purpose where, you know, I went contracting back in the day and they need my skill set. Now it's like, I feel more integrated as a civilian, like, hey, this guy needs my skill set because he needs it for his business, and I need it for my business, and we need it to help each other. These guys are changing this. And so that's really given me the another change, I guess, if you wanted to talk about change.
Yeah.
Like how that's affected me too. Like, that was another major turning point. And I think that's where a lot of people just need to get. Like, it's okay to be a plumber, an electrician, a welder, you know, a carpenter, whatever you want to go to school for. You know, you don't have to throw yourself into these niches, because if you would have talked to me, you know, a couple of years ago, you would never think that, oh, this is, you know, Jordan Laird, he's a web designer slash you know, does all this artistic crap and like graphic design and whatever. Like you would have never thought that. But now is like when I was in Idaho at the bar, that's what most people see at first. And now they're shocked that when they hear that I'm in the Marine Corps. And I think that's the way that people need to transition is, you know, the one thing about being a sniper is hiding, blending, and deceiving, right? But we failed to do that once we get out of the Marine Corps. Like I failed to hide, I failed to blend, and I failed to deceive. In the aspects of, like, I should dress like a regular civilian would dress. I should act like a regular civilian would talk, which is normal, and not use isms and Marine Corps isms. And, like, that's as fucked up as football bat or, you know, all these other just random terms. And then deceive. Like, they need to – what if I were doing, like, some – everybody wants to be special operations, right? Well, the whole point of special operations is, like, not being special operations. Like, when you go into countries and you're, like, part of ground branch or you're part of some of these TFOs, like, if people knew who you were, you wouldn't get the job done. And so – but – all of a sudden you get out and now you have to let everybody know who you were. And that's the exact opposite. Like if you want to be more successful, people can know what you did and what you do and be proud of that without you having to be an asshole.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head, man. I don't know. I think, and you know, what's interesting too, is that like, you know, with your design work and with, you know, like any of the trades that you mentioned too, those are all, it's almost like a language.
Right.
Right. And it's not really like a regular civilian language. It's not really a veteran language, but it's, you know, it's something that people need done. And so they're going to come to you for it.
Right.
And, you know, you don't, that it's common ground at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think it goes to what you were talking about, how, you know, going to college or whatever is like the best thing to help with transition. It is a language in the sense that if I were to go have a drink, go to out to a bar or something, I could talk about, I remember when, if there goes that route or some individual subject gets brought up, I can have a general understanding of that subject, whether it's web design or college or a different like psychology class I took or history or something. Instead of being pigeonholed into my career and discount the rest of American society as being fucked up because they don't understand me, when only 0.2% or whatever, however, you know, the numbers are always so changing in hearsay, but, you know, actually served Iraq. So who's the actual asshole if I'm going out and, you know, this guy's talking about work and about how his dairy works and all this stuff. And I'm like, I remember when I was on a dairy, not because I was in Iraq, slaying bitches, you know? He's going to be like, you're an asshole. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. You know, but that does, like you're saying, it's a language. And if I went to, well, or I did anything outside, that gives me something to talk about, relate to these people about, relate to, because they're not, we say it like they're these indigenous personnel, like that we've never seen before. But it's not like you lost everything that you were when you were a kid before you joined. Yeah. I mean, I still love, you know, that's why I always bring up the nerd stuff. Cause most people like in our generation remember, but dude, I used to play GoldenEye on my Nintendo 64, like 24/7 with my bros, and you like get odd job and there was the no kneeling rule. And like, you had all sorts of these like different things going on, or like you watch WWE and WWF. And, you know, I literally thought Sting actually died when he fell from the balcony. You know, you have these like moments in your life that are powerful, that are funny, that you can talk about later. But you don't. You choose to discount everything that you've ever known growing up, everything that everybody else has gone into, just because you went and did a service for however long. And granted, it's going to change you. You're going to have these issues and stuff, but you can't hold anybody else accountable for it except you, no matter what. You can't, because you're the one that joined. You can think the government's corrupt, and, oh, I went over there because the government just wanted oil. Okay, well, then why did you join? There hasn't been a draft since the Vietnam War. Why did you join if you thought that we were just over there for oil or doing all this? And no matter what people try and blame on, they can't. And that's why it's like it's a giant fallacy, and that's why they just go further down the rabbit hole, because you're only isolating yourself more and perpetuating the problem more.
What do you think is next for you? Are you gonna how are you gonna grow your design business?
It's a good question. Did you forget? I'm just a grunt. I'm just gonna use right. That's an excuse I can use. I still got that in my pocket, right? No,
maybe we'll just edit that question out.
No, it's all good. Food noises. Yeah, sorry. Actually, I was munching on a Snickers, so I need filler. No. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna keep just pushing this right now. I'm reaching out and networking with a lot of veteran companies that are starting out.
Yeah, you're starting to get a lot of hits for clientele, right?
Yeah, for sure. And so it's been definitely a blessing. And just getting all these people that are interested, because there are, and that's another thing, dude. We push all these people to get started or go do this, but then when they get out in the real world, like, oh, fuck, how do I get a website? How do I do this? How do I... this, and so it's nice being able to provide that for them, and so that's right. That's definitely been a huge plus. So in regards of like where do I go from here, it's honestly just refining, a lot of refinement, because it is my own business, so I am learning a lot. Like,
yeah,
oh, I should probably have this paperwork in place, or I should probably make sure I look professional when I do this or that, or so. But I'll probably just go back to Idaho. My goal is to move up to Haley, which is like right south of, it's like the cheaper part of Sun Valley, you know? Yeah. And just live in the mountains. And that's the thing with this, is it's going to allow me to do the things that I love. It'll allow me to go out and go hiking and go be in the wilderness and go just adventure and like kill my own soul. But also helping out like veterans and helping out the communities, and I don't know. So I'm pretty stoked about it, man. I only got like not even 3.5 months left. And so I'm pretty stoked about it.
That's good. We'll we'll wrap it up here. Is there anything else? Where can people find you on social media, Jordy?
Yeah, that's it, man. I only have an Instagram right now. I'm going to get a Facebook. I'm going to get other social media. Right. I am a social media company, so I think having social media is probably a good idea. So I'll be getting all that started.
And what's your Instagram? Is just Jordy Laird?
Yep, Jordy.Laird. And it'll be like SVT Creative. LLC in the description. And it's funny because I've been building other people's websites and doing work for them, and I still haven't built my website yet for my company.
I know. I was gonna ask you about that the other day. I noticed that you still hadn't had anything linked to it.
Right. Oh wow. Yeah. I'm working on it, buddy. No, for sure.
All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, you guys. I honestly do. It's a good thing that you guys are doing, and I think this is like where podcasts needs to be going, honestly. Yeah, instead of getting a bunch of talking robots spitting the same, you know, shenanigans all the time.
I appreciate that, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for coming on, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take it easy.
I think the biggest misperception is that somehow we're damning. Nothing really can stop us.